Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm visiting Atrium HQ in San Francisco to chat with two serial entrepreneurs, Justin Kahn and Randy Du. Justin's career blew up in the mid-2000s when he started live streaming himself 24/7 on Justin TV, which I know, very weird, especially back then. Justin TV was a Y Combinator-backed startup, which then pivoted into Twitch and sold to Amazon for nearly $1 billion. He then went on to found multiple other startups, including Exec, Whale, and now Atrium. Randy Du has a unique background. Before jumping into tech, he rose to fame as an R&B and hip-hop artist. He then went on to join Google before founding a few startups of his own, many of which have been centered around his passion for music, which shouldn't be a surprise knowing him. And we talk about a few of them, including The Drop, The Artist Union, and Audius, a decentralized audio distribution platform that he started earlier this year. On the podcast, we share some of their learnings building startups, apps they love, including a journal to improve mental health, and we talk about how Justin survives in Silicon Valley without using a phone. But before I jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Fun fact, the gorgeous 1985 Ferrari Testarossa has appreciated upward of 400% over the past 10 years, outperforming the S&P 500, most real estate, and other traditional investments. The problem is, regular investors like myself don't have a few hundred thousand dollars laying around to buy and hold these rare and expensive assets. With this realization, New York-based Rally Road built an app, you may have seen it on Product Hunt last year, so that normal folks like myself can invest in high-value alternative assets like the Ferrari for as little as $50 per share. You can even get a fancy share certificate so you can show it off to your friends. All offerings are SEC registered, and all assets are museum quality and professionally maintained by the company for long-term appreciation. Members can participate in initial offerings as well as buy and sell shares in regular trading windows for each asset, very similar to the stock market. They're starting with classic cars, but look out for their launch of the second asset class in early 2019 as they work towards democratizing alternative asset investing. Check it out at joinrally.com/producthunt. As some of you may know, in addition to my day job at Product Hunt, I also invest in early stage startups thanks to AngelList Venture Fund Services. In 2017, I prepared a deck, raised some money from friends and people I've worked with over the years to bootstrap my first fund. I raised money and capital from LPs, and AngelList handled everything else, providing a dedicated account manager, a real-time dashboard to manage my portfolio and valuations, tools to keep my LPs up to date, and all the tax and accounting overhead. They make it super easy for me to move quickly. While still relatively new, AngelList has already hosted over 130 venture funds, which can range as small as $500,000 to tens of millions of dollars under management. And as a fund manager, your job is to simply find great entrepreneurs and choose who to invest in. Everything else is handled. If you're interested in starting a fund, learn more at angel.co/venturefunds or drop me a line at ryan@producthunt.com and I'd be happy to help. Hey, everybody, this is Ryan. I'm at Atrium HQ here in Soma. I'm here with Justin and Randy Du. What's up, guys?
What's up, Ryan?
Hey, so what are we going to talk about today? I hear you got rid of your phone, Justin.
We're going to talk about the phone-free life and products and cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, whatever you want, Ryan. We're going to talk about anything you
want. Awesome. Let's first dive into a little bit of background. Like, what's your background, Justin?
Sure. So really quickly, my name is Justin Kahn. I'm a entrepreneur and investor here in Silicon Valley for the past 13 years. Started a bunch of companies. Most of them were abject, abysmal failures, and one success, which was Twitch. And then I was a partner at Y Combinator for a few years investing in startups. That's how we met, Ryan. And then now I am working on a company called Atrium, which is a law firm for startups to help fast-growing startups grow even faster, if it's possible. So that's what I'm working on now, CEO of this new startup, and we're off to the races.
Nice. And you started it how long ago?
It's been 18 months. The company is going pretty good. 130 people so far.
That's what I was going to point out. So we're at the office and I'm just like shocked. It's been only 18 months and you have already that many people. It's like, for me, that's scary.
Well, it is scary, you know, but it raised a decent amount. We're lucky to be supported by a lot of different investors, including General Catalyst and Andreessen. And so We have some resources, kind of expanded, but measuring, you know, your company success and headcount is like measuring an airplane in weight. So
yeah,
not necessarily the right measure of success. We do have an amazing team of managers and ICs and brilliant people who are much smarter than me, which I'm thankful for. But, you know, a lot of the work is in the future. It's like it hasn't happened yet, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Randy, what's your tell the people about your background?
Yeah, so I'm currently the founder and CEO of Audius, which is basically a decentralized audio hosting and streaming network. Before this, I founded a company with Justin here, and we built a few apps, one of which a lot of Product Hunt folks might know, called Whale. And then that same company, we built Poly and the Artist Union. So we did a bunch of stuff. Before that, I was a Googler and then also an artist in my native country of Sri Lanka.
Ranadu's a famous artist. He's not just an artist, but he's like the Justin Timberlake of Sri Lanka. Like,
yeah, I've heard your music. Heard you DJ a few times. Not enough, though. I think only once, maybe twice.
Yeah. DJing is a fairly new... Like, that's what I do in the US, I guess. But back home, I'm more of a pop artist and I sing and produce.
Have you done any performances as of late? Anything recently? Or?
Yeah, the last time I played... startups are an all-consuming thing. So being focused on my startup. But yeah, I played in Dubai last year. And then played a few parties for Justin here. Just, you know, play around San Francisco whenever I get a chance. The last big festival I played was Ultra, I think, in 2016. Oh. Yeah.
As most people in technology at one point wanted to be a DJ, or rather...
Everyone still wants to be a DJ.
I still want to be a DJ. I just don't want to put in the work. It's the problem.
Justin wants to be a DJ as well.
Yeah, everybody in tech wants to be a DJ, and everybody who is a DJ wants to be in
tech.
Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, there's this app. It's called Pacemaker. Have you played with
it? Yes, Pacemaker DJ. Yeah, it's
Pacemaker's
a great app.
Pacemaker's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What is it? Does it just DJ for you?
It just essentially helps you to put together sets.
Yeah, it's like training wheels for DJ. Find two songs that have similar BPMs, click a button.
And it just mixes it for you.
Yeah.
Can you just use this live, like as a plugin for Ableton?
You can't. You can use it on your phone, though, which is pretty interesting. But
which you won't be able to use.
Actually, that's a good idea. They should just make it for Ableton so that it just mixes everything automatically.
I'll just plug my phone into the like PA system.
And then put your hands up.
Yeah.
Just pretend you're doing something. So how did you two meet?
So we went to college together. We were Yale O5, but we didn't, you know, like we had mutual friends in college, but we met, I think.
Here in SF. Here in we SF, started hanging out after Randy was at Google, and I was kind of working on various startups and kind of reconnected and started hanging out maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, something like that.
It's a pretty long time ago now. Actually, music pretty much brought us together too, right? Like, because you were interested in kind of exploring and just like learning a little bit more about production and DJing. And I was at that point doing it a lot more seriously than I am now. So just, you know, just started talking about it. Went to Ultra, I think, also.
Yeah, we went to some shows together. And then, you know, we were talking about different ideas in music for how you would market yourself or yourself as an artist, or like different apps that might enable people to reach new audiences. And this is kind of before Spotify, you know, Discover existed, and you know, SoundCloud was super popular. That was how most people were getting discovered. People thought of Spotify more for artists that were already popular. And so we started playing around with different ways that you could discover new artists, and inspired by actually like Product Hunt and Reddit, thought maybe you could create a platform that would let people discover and vote on new music. And so we launched a version of that. Wasn't probably compelling enough for people to actually continually return. And I think a lot of the platforms did, you know, kind of optimize their own discovery. And so, but that got us started working together on various projects.
That was called The Drop. I remember that.
That was The Drop. Yeah, that was the first thing.
The Drop dot club.
The Drop dot club. Club.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great
made dot club a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Put dot club on the map.
I love that the branding still was very memorable, though. It felt different. You know, a lot of websites and products, you visit the website and there's sort of the over the shoulder desk. Like
fucking basic.
Yeah, they are. They have white backgrounds. I mean, I guess Product Hunt's pretty minimal, but it works for us. But
at least you're using red as a color instead of blue. Like everybody has blue, you know. The Drop was cool because purple background, neon robot head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Neon yellow robot head, purple background.
It set the vibe.
Dot club domain. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. Was The Drop the first thing that you built together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you did experiment with, was it called Artist Union, the product that
Yeah. So that product's actually still around. That was the second thing we built. It's a growth tool for artists. So they use the different tools we built to grow on SoundCloud, Spotify, and YouTube. About 100,000 artists now use it. Between 80 and 100,000 artists have used the product, and we still get about 500,000 MAU on that site. So, you know, we kept it alive, and it's grown over time. And just, you know, artists just from all over the world are using the product, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, but you know what they say, 500,000 MAU ain't what it used to be.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I know.
It's like that's like someone's cottage business now, you know, like it's unfortunate. Like, you know, you gotta, in order to build something on the consumer side, you have to have, you know, massive tens of millions of MAU scale.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. And same thing with the funding too, has also changed quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
$1 million was quite a bit of money a decade ago in startup land.
Right. Not anymore.
And ironically, it actually took more money to start most startups too, in terms of infrastructure and servers and
everything. Before, yeah.
I think the sweet spot was, you know, in 2010 through 2013 or something, where the costs were relatively, you know, much lower on the salary, on like kind of startup salary side. Now your $1 million is like 2 ML engineers.
If you hire in San Francisco, and there's a lot of people, you know, talking about distributed workforces and remote working and everything. Is Atrium fully centralized right now, or how
Atrium
do you think
is a distributed workforce through this office? We have an office across the street actually that we just opened up, because office space in San Francisco is also at an all-time low vacancy rate. Yeah. So there's, you know, so few offices. We've, you know, broken up and have this like satellite space now. I'd like to get to the point where we have a more distributed workforce. Actually, one of my beliefs is that SF is no longer the hands down winner in terms of places to build your company. You know, Atrium is a little different because we serve a lot of technology companies and startups. And so this is like where the customers are. But for a lot of people, I think if you can build a company somewhere outside of SF, there may be a compelling reason to do that. And certainly a lot more companies are going to multiple offices outside of SF. You know, they might have a headquarters in SF or sales office in SF, but having other offices outside where they, you know, have more engineering or back office seem to make sense now.
Yeah, we're as some people know, like, we're fully distributed. And we weren't fully distributed exactly a few years ago. We had, I think, 5 or 6 people in San Francisco, but now we have, I guess, technically on the product team, 2. Myself and Jack here in San Francisco, and everyone else is, you know, everywhere
all over the world.
Are you, what's your team makeup?
Yeah, our team is, I think, going to be 11 in January. So we're 10 right now, and everybody's in San Francisco in the same office.
Yeah.
We've had debates about this, about sort of how do you build culture and how do you build like a strong base for your team if everyone's not in the office. And we've sort of landed on let's build it here. Obviously, the costs are much higher and it's very much more competitive to hire engineers in San Francisco. But like, that's actually a good question for you. If you're building it totally decentralized, Product Hunt has a culture, right? Like that you sort of communicate externally at least, right? Like, and so how do you actually make sure people are on the same page and you guys have like a corporate culture?
Even though we are distributed, we actually just did an offsite in LA a few weeks ago. We try to do one big offsite with the whole team once a year. And then throughout the year, sometimes people come over, you know, across the world to do projects and like stay with us here in SF for like a week or two. But yeah, doing that was great. It was expensive, you know, flying
everybody in.
Yeah, we had 17, 18 people fly in, I think. And so it's not cheap, but it's actually well worth the money. And when you consider how much money you're also saving by not having to pay, you know, SF salaries, it's worth it too, in the long run.
If your team is distributed, why are you still living here, Ryan?
You know, I haven't announced this, and no, I'm not making decisions yet, but I'm tempted by LA. I'm not joking.
There we go.
Playing around. And partly because I can work anywhere, and I do go to LA, and that's where Susie is. So I, you know, work from there often. And the thing about LA that everyone complains about, of course, is the traffic. However, if you work in a distributed team, you don't have to drive to an office.
Right.
So I can kind of, you know, get the best of LA without the worst of it in some sense. So I don't know. I might move to LA at some point. I'm going to stay here for a little while. But, you know, actually going back to your point about building companies in San Francisco or elsewhere, Product Hunt, it was very important now in hindsight to build at least the home base, at least have myself in San Francisco, because I was able to build like real strong relationships with a lot of investors and a lot of people in technology, which became not only investors in the company, but also like kind of the foundation of the community in the beginning. And now I think I've created a network, or at least relationships enough with people here where I can, I can move elsewhere now, and I'm not going to lose those connections.
Yeah, that's almost certainly the case. I think a lot of people, myself included, underweight that, you know, you forget how valuable having that network is and building that network, and then you're enabled to maybe move elsewhere, keeping all those connections.
Yeah. Are you going to stay here for, you know, a while, or are you thinking about moving at some point?
Well, you know, I own my house here. All my friends are here. Mm-hmm. I have a vacation house here. Well, not in SF, but nearby. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm probably stuck here forever. I'm going to bury me here.
Yeah. It's not a bad spot. People like to hate on SF, but it's
A bad thing. I think too much of a good thing, you forget how good it is, right?
Yeah.
So I think gratitude is really important. Something I picked up from Justin. We have this journal now that is helping a lot. So, and every day I write a lot of days, I write about how awesome it is to live in San Francisco, you know, and have all these resources and friends, and just the life here is great. Mm-hmm. And we, I think, like, just get caught up in just a little bit that's bad and then think everything's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fashionable to be a complainer.
To hate on San Francisco is a very fashionable thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay. So Justin, you're not using a phone. You're in Silicon Valley and you're walking around phoneless.
Right. So this week I've been doing an experiment where I try to get rid of my phone and replace it with an Apple Watch. And now that the Apple Watch has, you know, direct 3G connection, I had the idea to do it a couple of years ago, but there was no watch replacement because there were a few things that I wanted, you know, texting and phone calls and ideally Uber or Lyft and maps. And the Apple Watch now does, like, you know, 90% of that. There's a few things that it's missing, but it does most things. And so I've been leaving my phone at home during the day. I looked at the screen time feature and I was like, I use the phone 5.5 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. That's a lot. It's like
lot.
A job.
Yeah.
It's like a part-time job.
Dude, you're awake. Your screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're awake, what, 16-ish hours out of the day?
Yeah. I'm awake 16 hours. Probably I sleep about 7 hours. So I'm awake 17 hours. So that's, you know, basically a third of the time.
Wow.
On the phone. Now, half of that is probably work-related and half is probably leisure-related. But the work-related stuff, I feel like, is better if I batch it and just do it on my computer. Mm-hmm. And if someone really needs to get a hold of me, you know, they can. And then on the, you know, leisure related things, I realized I didn't want to look at my phone especially don't mind having my phone at work that much. But when I am out and, you know, either my personal time or socializing with other people or talking to other people, meeting other people, I want to spend my time connecting with other people and not be distracted by
notifications
or like tempted to like go look at Instagram, something like that. You know, I was thinking this morning, like, the smartphone is like, it's like a jewel for your mind, you know, like it's just like, it's like there, it's like in theory, it's helpful for doing something, but mostly it's just like a habit and I just want to like get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying.
How long are you gonna do it?
It's only been 4 days. So check back in 6 months from now.
Yeah.
The thing I actually want to use my phone for is that gratitude journal that Randy was talking about. So I use it in the morning for that.
Is that it? An app? You mean just a?
Okay. It's just an app.
Yeah. There's an app called 5 Minute Journal, which is a great product, by the way. If, you know, we talk about amazing products. It's a really great product. I think it's $5, but it's just a very simple product. You know, every day it asks you the same question, which is, what are 3 things you're grateful for, and what are 3 things you're going to do to make today great, and then some affirmations that you can write down if you want, and then you can include a photo, and at the end of the day, you write down, you know, 3 things that made that day awesome and what you could have done to make that day better. It's very simple. Only takes 5 minutes. Makes me feel noticeably happier every day. Recommend it to everyone.
And you've been using it too?
Yeah. Yeah. For a few weeks now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a fairly new thing for me. I think you've been doing it for a lot longer.
About 6 months for me.
Yeah.
You know, people ask, like, do you get bored or do you write the same things? But, you know, they're all many same similar themes, but I actually find that there's, you know, new stuff to write about every day, which is good, you know?
Yeah. We're approaching the new year. And so that's like when everyone starts to do self-reflection and everything and set goals and all of that. And I've not been doing what you're doing, but I have been reflecting a little bit on, just almost like, what is it? One thing that I asked myself actually was like, what's the perfect day? Like if you just erased everything, like if you woke up in the morning, what's your perfect day? I found that as like a useful framework or like question to ask. Because if you can imagine that, then why don't you just make it? Why don't you get there?
Right.
So, I'm thinking a lot about that. So we all love music. I'm a huge music fan, love live music. I love things like SoundCloud and Spotify. Spotify Discover Weekly is like amazing when it comes to product, like music discovery.
Right.
Can you talk about what you're doing now, Randy? It's like,
yeah.
I'm super into it.
Yeah. So music discovery, I think, so basically SoundCloud has gotten most of the market in the sort of the independent sector, right? Of DJs, hip hop artists, et cetera, putting their music directly so that people can listen to it, right? But what they didn't get right was that they couldn't monetize that market at all. And then they've had business model challenges, right? By being sort of a centralized company. So what we want to do is actually sort of change that model and build sort of decentralized infrastructure so that people can connect directly with an artist. And also in the future, hopefully make payments through cryptocurrency to those artists in real time. Because as an independent artist today, it takes anywhere between 3 months and about 18 months to get paid from the time you stream my music. So we think that's wrong in 2018. And the market's actually, that's the fastest growing segment of the market. So if you ask any LA person who's in the business, they would say, oh no, you know, people only want to listen to Taylor Swift and the major music artists. But I think you've been in the forefront of sort of products. Music is sort of going through the same thing with the internet. It's, you know, largely fragmented and people sort of have these niche audiences and tastes are kind of expanding from beyond just what's on the radio.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the future of it, right? And that's 3% of the market right now. So recorded music, people say there's no money in it, but it was a $19 billion market last year. And streaming's only 50% of it. So it's about $9 billion. That 3% of that entire market is independent, but it's growing at 30 or 40% a year. And it's, you know, it's going to be a multi-billion dollar market. And that's where we are. And that's the future that we see, and we want to support that market by building something that's decentralized.
And it's kind of funny how, or interesting to me, how genres have blended together so much.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I don't know if it's largely because of the internet, but
it is.
It used
it's
to be
because of the internet.
There's rock, there's pop, there's rap. Now it's like, what is Post Malone? Like, he's.
It's just everything.
I don't know.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, it's, that is because of the internet, right? Mm-hmm. Like kids don't have like, I'm a rocker, I'm a hip hop person, I only listen to EDM. That doesn't happen now. If you ask, what are you into? It's like all over the place, right? That is because they're not getting sort of their music fed to them by Rolling Stone or Billboard or the FM radio, right? It's like they go on the internet, they find what they like on YouTube or SoundCloud or Spotify, and then they just consume it and become fans of it.
Yeah. So what kind of, people ask me like, what kind of music are you into? I'm like, I have no idea how to answer that.
Yeah.
But what kind of music are you into? or what artists are you really a fan of right now?
I am also all over the place. I would generally say I listen to sort of a lot of electronic, but also a lot of hip hop. And recently I've just been listening mostly to like sort of international music. That's a blend of either hip hop or Latin and just kind of other cultures. So like I'm super into, there's a lot of like Nigerian music that I'm into. And then there's a bunch of artists in the sort of urban DC scene, as they call it, which I was a part of. So it's almost like hip hop R&B music blended with Asian stuff, either Indian or sort of Hindi, Punjabi, Sinhalese, Tamil, like those languages. Yeah, that's, and then tons of electronic music.
Yeah. What do you listen to now nowadays, Justin?
Right now, I've been listening to a lot of this kind of weird organic tribal house type of music, kind of like Satori or Nicholas Jarr.
Nicholas Jarr is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Then I'm swing all the way to like super pop electronic music. I've been listening to like Galantis a lot because I've seen him in concert a couple times recently, and those guys are just so happy to be performing that their enthusiasm is infectious. I like that.
Yeah. Something about music that when you see an artist live, at least for me, it changes my perception of their music going forward. Usually better. Positive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Every now and then, actually the reverse.
The opposite. When they don't sing like is a terrible performer.
I won't name this artist's name, but me and Susie, big fans of her music, her first album. And then we saw her live and we're like, oh, like it just did. She was new in her career.
Yeah. But when you see somebody who's so thankful and excited to be performing and they really put their heart into it, you know, it's really impactful. I've seen a few artists like that recently, like Alice in Wonderland. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I've seen her.
Yeah. She's great.
So into it.
Yeah.
It's like amazing. You're like, I want to support that person.
Yeah. So are you thinking about or planning to kind of provide more of a microtransaction kind of model?
Yes, is that how it might work? For those artists. Yeah, exactly. Good thing about crypto is also sort of all the music platforms that are centralized, they sort of collect money on one side and then they have to do all these deals with different sort of third parties. Then they first pay those parties and then whatever is left over is paid to artists. And that's kind of how the models always worked. We want to change that. If all the transactions are public and everybody knows who's getting paid what, I think that's sort of better for everyone, right? And crypto is good in that sense if you execute it correctly to cut out the middlemen that aren't needed. And artists need to see that they can actually get a lot more by owning their music versus signing to a label and sort of handing over their copyrights forever. So even me personally, I was signed to Sony and like my first album is signed in perpetuity to Sony. I don't own that music. I can't do anything with it, which kind of sucks, right? I don't think as an artist, you are so, you know, programmed to want to sign with these sort of brands from a young age that you sort of don't really think about what you're giving up. But I think with the internet, again, with more people having information, now they know, oh, this is the actual trade-off, right? And the more chance the rappers and more independent artists that are sort of coming out and saying, like, I'm going to stay independent, I'm going to own my stuff, and I'm going to sort of, you know, keep those rights and monetize it myself and build my team myself, and you can do it too. I think that's better for, healthier for everyone. And there's, you know, people keep saying artists don't get paid enough, and here's a way to do it, right?
Yeah. You both built many different products in different spaces. This is a really broad question, but how do you think about building products? How do you MVP or test your ideas? How do you decide what to work on? Any advice around that?
In terms of deciding what to work on, I don't know if I'm like the right one to ask. I just like have flipped around to working on things that I found interesting at the time, you know, or things that were cool ideas. One of the things I feel like is being lost a little bit in San Francisco is that when I got here in the beginning in 2006, beginning for me, that wasn't the beginning, but like when I got here, I felt like a lot of people were building products that they were just cool ideas that they wanted to see happen. Mm-hmm. So Justin TV, you know, we were trying to make our own live reality TV show. That was not a business. It wasn't a good business then. It really wasn't a good business now either. But like it did tap into some themes, you know, social media, people broadcasting various parts of their lives out there. I think you've seen various kind of reformations of that idea in things like Snapchat stories, right? And Facebook stories and Instagram stories and WhatsApp stories.
Product stories coming soon.
Yeah. The cool part was like, that was an idea that we just wanted to see happen in the world, kind of cool, crazy experiment. So I've done a lot of those. Mostly they did not work out. Although I think that if you get something out there and you just iterate on it and really listen to your audience, eventually you will find something that works. I think it's really good if you're the user of your own product. I don't know, that's probably pretty basic.
But a lot of people, people build something for, like, I've explored product ideas for something that is like something I was totally not passionate about, mm-hmm. but I was like interested in the concept of building a business, and because it was like a, you know, Uber for laundry was an idea I had, you know.
You don't do laundry.
I don't like to do laundry.
Yeah.
Like in theory, it was like, oh, here's a cool business idea. But then I thought about, well, is this something I'd like excited to actually pursue? Like be a laundry guy?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. You should work on something that you actually want to do. I think it's just way easier. It's not important that you can't be successful doing something you don't like. I think lots of people in their careers, not outside of tech, you know, inside of tech and outside are successful doing things they don't like. It's just, it's much easier if you actually are the user of your own product and you're excited about it, because then you actually will think about ways to make it better. You know, you don't have to force yourself to do, you know, research to like figure out how to make it better. You know?
Yeah. I was speaking with an entrepreneur yesterday who's building a product for ballroom dancers, like experienced ballroom dancers. And that he is a ballroom dancer. It was kind of funny because he was telling me he's done all these surveys and research and he linked me to this giant doc with all this stuff. And my advice to him was sort of like, you're overthinking it. Like you are the customer. Don't try to prove out the model with surveys and like talking to people, like ship something and like test something.
I agree.
Because he could spend weeks and weeks doing that when he could probably get further along in like an afternoon, like building an MVP or, you know,
I think consumers, it's really hard to ask people what they want and just build it. I know a lot of people say like, talk to your users and just like ask them what they want. I think talking to your users is not about hey, here's an idea. Please validate it for me.
Yeah.
That's how most entrepreneurs take it. And I've made that same mistake, right? No one would have probably told Evan Spiegel, like, build a service with disappearing messages and I will use it all day, or, you know, build streaks, right? Like, these are like sort of, there's a certain amount of intuition that goes into it. And that's where, if you're the user of it, that product, it helps, right? Because that's not something you can research and learn. And I think the best products are like that, where you sort of stumble onto something, but also sort of stumble onto that because you know certain things, or because of your experience, and because you're a user. And then once you get that out there, then you can sort of talk to people about their feedback and iterate it. And another, I guess, thing that I learned building products was not to really ask users for solutions, because I've seen that. I've done that myself again, right? Well, how, okay, so like, what's your, users will probably most of the time give you a solution that they want. That's not really your job. Your job is to figure out what problems they have and figure out the best solution for that.
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of experimentation and like tinkering and building. And so let's say you have something, it's working, however you define working.
Yeah.
There's something there. At what point do you, and maybe you have examples of this in your career, like what point do you say, this is a business, I'm going to raise money for it? Like, what's that tipping point?
That's
for you?
Hard.
I think it's really when you need money to scale.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You need money to get to the next level of whatever you want to get to. That's when you want to raise money.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't raise money just to have a startup or just to raise money. You should raise money because, oh, I need to hire more salespeople so I can sell more of this product. Mm-hmm. Or there's some set of product development that we need to make in order to get a wider adoption of this product. So, you know, we need to invest in hiring engineers, and you can articulate a clear ROI of, you know, applying capital to your theoretical business.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit. Maybe there's some parallels to getting signed.
Yeah.
You know, people get gravitate towards getting signed by some, you know, notable label. Same thing for, you know, famous VC.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a win.
It feels like a win, but you're like sort of changing the goalpost at that point, right? That's what I think most entrepreneurs, like, including myself, that I, like, when I started working on products, I think I didn't realize the difference between a venture scale business and just building something that people use. And then the fact that when you do take money, you need to sort of think about it as a venture scale business and only do things that make sense in that model, right? That's what you're signing up for, at least. I think people take money and don't do that sometimes, but that's, you know, that's not really what the VCs and like folks that's are coming on board for. Yeah.
Yeah. I love to talk about some products that you love. I would ask like what's in your home screen, but again, Justin doesn't have a phone. What products do you love that more people need to know about? Like, what is it called? Gratitude Journal?
Yeah. Five minute journal.
5 minute journal.
5 minute journal.
That's one.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Are there some others? It could be apps, could be physical products. What are things that you love?
For me, we've been using this thing called Monday at work.
I've been getting the ads on YouTube for Monday.
Yeah,
so much. They are so advertising a lot.
They are. It's just basically a task management system for work, but I actually started using it for my personal life, and it's been very helpful in terms of like keeping track of sort of what I need to do and keeping everything prioritized. It was the first time I started doing that, and it's really, really helped, especially being a dad and just having so many things to do on a daily basis. It's that's really helped my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, more organized.
Organization.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I end up using TextEdit for my to-dos just because it's there on my computer, and I figured if I don't do it and it's important, it'll come back to me. So I just like clear it out every couple days.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's probably not the ideal like workflow.
I also like Strava a lot. I just moved, so I don't have a gym anymore. So in my building, so I've started running and sort of keeping track of sort of how many times you do this every week and sort of are you improving over time. That's been kind of cool. And then also the social aspects of it where you're seeing your friends also run or bike or whatever. That kind of motivates you to do it yourself.
Strava's pretty fantastic. I don't bike, but I have friends that do, and I see their routes.
Times. Yeah.
That's
so
super cool.
They have it for running too now. So a lot of folks are tracking their runs, and you kind of can discover routes and stuff around your neighborhood and things like that too.
Are you still on the bike? I know back in your Snapchat bike days, you were on the bike every day.
Yeah. I'm still keeping pretty fit. I've been working out 3 or 4 times a week. Yeah, I've been using the bike, and I bought a rowing machine too. That wasn't as good for Snapchat, you know.
It's hard to row with one hand while you're doing the selfie.
But I bought a rowing machine, and I've built out a little gym in my garage. So, but products I like for work, I like Airtable a lot. I think it's super powerful. It's an amazing product. Actually, Headspace, which is like pretty basic answer, but like I've been using Headspace. Got me into meditation earlier this year, and. Mm-hmm. I think it was a really good easing into it. And then I've been using Insight Timer, actually, which is basically just a timer to, you know, for a meditation timer. So I've been using that as well more recently. I guess I'm not
just adopting
Apple Watch, I guess. Yeah, I really think the Apple Watch has come a long way, because I had the first edition and it was not very useful.
Yeah.
I felt like it did not declutter my life. It just, you know, I just got all the notifications I got on my phone, and except they were more visible. I've kept my phone on silent for a very long time, you know, probably the past 6 or 7 years. Mm. And so now with this new watch, I can kind of filter all the notifications, get rid of my phone, filter all the notifications just down to text messages, you know, and phone calls. And that's been pretty useful.
I never use an Apple Watch, actually. It just hasn't, I haven't found a use for it yet.
And yeah.
I don't need it for any of the fitness things. I feel like it would be more distracting to have notifications on my wrist, but
yeah, but you can delete. You can control which notifications go to it, you know, which I think is super important.
Yeah. Cool. What do you want to plug? Where can they find you? What's it new in both your startups?
You first. People go? You got a lot to plug.
Just say, you know, Atrium, if for startups that are thinking about legal needs, is atrium.co. And you can check us out. We'd be happy to help you.
Good legal help is so important. It's expensive at the end of the day. I mean, not Atrium in particular, but legal advice is expensive, but it's well worth it because you can get screwed over if you do it wrong.
For us, audios.co. If you're interested in sort of working on the future of audio and music, we're looking for engineers and product people and artist relations folks as well. So audios.co, and then my music is at, you know, you can go on YouTube and search for Ranadu or SoundCloud/Ranadu.
Nice.
For my music.
That's a missed opportunity. Yeah. It could have been audius.club.
Yeah. Tell me you got that domain.
If not, you should register. Not the .club. Publishes. That's a good idea.
You should
though.
Grab that.
Yeah.
audius.club. Something's going up there.
Yeah. I know. Someone's going to take that.
Someone's going to.
You have a week immediately before I publish this podcast. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for coming on, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
See ya. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.